Did you ever wonder where the hashtag was dreamed up?
We were trying to figure out a way for, you know, grouping things on Twitter, and we've been having this ongoing conversation. And then I tweeted, what do you guys think about using hashtag or pound?
Or how the pound key became the hashtag.
End by pressing the pound key.
Or even how hashtags have made such an impact today.
Hashtags might have seemed nerdy then, but they aren't now. I mean, they're a commonplace. Well, 6-year-old kids say, you know, hashtag shut up and to each other, and you know, there's nothing unusual about it now.
All of this and more in this episode of
The History of the Internet.
Welcome to the very first episode of The History of the Internet. I'm Jamie Wareham, and I've been making this podcast series for nearly 2 years now. There are a couple of times where I've come back and updated the story, because, as you know, the internet is pretty fast. But so you get a feel for how the format will work. Each episode is going to start at the beginning of a trend. It started online, but it now dominates our day-to-day lives. We're then going to work our way through and catch up before pondering. What's next for the story? Season 1 focuses on subjects on the social internet, and it's supported by The Memo. Visit thememo.com to read more about the topics in this series. Their editorial mission is making the future more human, and I love it. In episode 1, we're talking hashtags. Hashtags everywhere.
Hashtag beast mode.
Hashtag awesome.
Throwback Thursday TBT.
Hashtag namaste. Hashtag bitches.
Hashtag shut up.
Easily annoying, but potentially life-changing. Hashtags are a cultural phenomenon that has given us a way to grasp the ever-complicated world that we live in. Over the course of this show, we'll explore the history of the hashtag before exploring its impact. We start our journey with the hashtag inventor, Chris Messina, and with the beautiful benefit of hindsight, I asked him what he now thinks of his invention years later.
You see a lot of people being like, oh my god, you use too many hashtags, or like, hashtags are so stupid, or like, I don't know, there's all sorts of very valid complaints about hashtags, and it's really not about the hashtag itself. It's about the users, you know, don't hate the game, hate the player kind of thing.
But is Chris proud of the hashtag?
I am. And it's not so much about me, but about, I think, bringing this culture and these ideas to a broader audience. So when I think about the hashtag as kind of an enabling technology, you know, it can be used for good and bad. But, you know, you've seen the social change happen as a result of these things.
So let's go right back to the hashtag humble beginnings of the pound sign's use online and see how it's evolved.
In 1988, Internet Relay Chat used what we now know as hashtags to categorize posts, images, and content.
You know, it's funny because we're seeing this sort of resurgence again backwards in time, in a sense. You know, like, if you think about Slack, which is this sort of work collaboration software, well, they basically built IRC, Internet Chat, into the browser. And so that core behavior was sort of there throughout. We sort of had to move into the mobile era, figure out how to use our phones as publishing devices, and now we're sort of going back again with Slack.
Flash forward.
On August 23rd, 2007, Chris Messina tweets,
what do you guys think about using hashtag or pound for groups, as in hashtag barcamp and then the message?
And days later.
August 26th, 2007, Stowe Boyd brings together the words hash and tag in a blog post that defines the way we use hashtags today.
I'm the one that came up with the name. You know, it's like Chris invented a sports car, but I'm the one that said, let's call it the Mustang.
We're going to hear more from Stowe later.
October 2007, San Diego resident Nate Rigger started appending all his posts with the hashtag San Diego Fire during a wildfire in California.
Up until the moment that I got involved with him, had been sending out all these tweets with a prefix of San space Diego space fire, so three words. The problem was, like, that was very hard to search for at the time because Twitter didn't even have its own search information. So I sent him a message and I was like, hey, Nate, what do you think about using a hashtag for this? Hashtag San Diego fire. And eventually he switched over. And so this is sort of one of those first instances where you can literally see the before and the after, where he had decided to kind of move in this direction, and that became one of the first canonical uses of Twitter for spreading, you know, news and citizen journalism.
2009, Twitter adopts hashtags and makes them hyperlinkable.
What? You mean Twitter still hasn't embraced the hashtag by this point?
There was a lot of skepticism, and perhaps rightly so, about hashtags. You know, I went to Twitter's headquarters in San Francisco in 2007, like the day after I wrote my blog post, and I literally talked to the founders and I proposed this idea to them. And, you know, straight face, no lie to me, they were like, that's a really dumb idea. It's never going to catch on.
Worst idea ever. So what does Twitter have to say about all of this? Lewis Wiltshire, the Director of Media Partnerships at Twitter.
I think it's always been something that the world owned, that the world felt passionate about. And so whether that was the news community, the journalism community that I was a part of, or people that felt that it gave them a voice, the direction of it was at least in part shaped by its users.
But we'll hear more from Lewis and Twitter later.
And it's just sort of funny to think back now. I mean, there's so many nerdy, geeky behaviors that are now part of common culture that in a lot of ways, like, you know, we won. I mean, you know, Drake has a song out now, right now, where he sort of mentions the hashtag, and it's kind of like, well, you know, it took a while, but these things that we were doing on computers that a lot of people thought of as, you know, being really nerdy things actually are things that a lot of people want to engage in.
That was when Ethan was pushing the Subaru hatchback. Man, I'm talking way before hashtags. I was running through the six with my...
Because let's face it, hashtags went on to being more than just a geeky tech term. They're a cultural phenomenon.
I don't know exactly when this was. Maybe it was a year or two later. But I was driving somewhere in a more rural place in California. And along the side of the road, there was a billboard for some political party. And they were using a hashtag. You know, out in the middle of nowhere, outside of Silicon Valley, I come along this thing, and people are using this for political discourse. And I'm like, that's when this has sort of moved beyond, you know, my geeky friends and moved into a more mainstream application. And then I was like, okay, I think this is going to happen now.
This party hashtag never stopped. Down another hashtag vodka shot. We can only talk in hashtag, hashtag. We can only talk in hashtag, hashtag. See me when I'm
so
hashtag
it's official. Hashtags are a thing. They're used on social media, people write songs about them, and they're even creeping into everyday conversation. But before we look at the impact they've had on society, marketing and language, first we need to understand the power they have to galvanise us into groups and communities.
Show me that in hashtag 3D. Is that hashtag in your pocket? Can we make some other sort of connection? You only talk in hashtag.
Earlier, we introduced Sto Boyd, a futurist and managing director of GigaOm, an emerging technologies research firm. Sto pulled together the words hash and tag in a series of blog posts widely credited to have inspired much of the thinking behind the way we use hashtags now. We sat down in a stuffy hotel room in London.
I came up with a word. I coined the term back in 2007. But there were no hashtags, at least not in Twitter, until... just around the time when Chris Messina and I started having a discussion about the idea. He was involved in a series of blog posts, in particular referred back to something I had written a couple of months before, where I was making a distinction between groups and groupings. Okay, so groups, the nature of the relationship in such a thing, it's the sort of thing you see in a lot of social tools, right? I create a project team, I invite a bunch of people to share, but the rights and responsibilities of the member of a group are granted to them by the group's creator. And I was saying the use of tags work differently. And that's why I created a term called groupings, saying all of the people that decide to tag a photograph, New York City, are members of a grouping, but nobody has to invite them. They become a member of the grouping simply by using a tag.
And let's pause there, because here is the important distinction to reiterate. You can belong to both groups and groupings, but when you're part of a grouping or hashtag, you don't need permission to join it. And that's where Sto's hypothesis for the hashtag really comes into play, because Chris Messina had initially wanted the hashtag to be more like groups and channels. But Sto thought even if you defined them that way, they'd be used more as groupings.
Ultimately, people mostly use hashtags the way I talked about it.
The use of hashtags now, it's grown so much more beyond Twitter.
I think it was my friend Jermaine Cassio who said we shouldn't be patting ourselves too much about the democratic sort of underpinnings of hashtags, because after all, we're going to use them. They will be used by somebody in a genocide somewhere. I mean, that's what ISIS is doing, for example. It's not necessarily the case that it inevitably leads to bettering the world or something. Leaving aside how it's used is an example of, you know, sort of the bottom-up nature of the web. Doesn't make it inherently democratic, because people are inherently extremely conservative. And so there's a deeply conservative aspect of what goes on the web. And as a result, hashtags become a servant to that.
And I certainly feel like we get galvanized behind hashtags. There seems to be something about it that really draws us in, which is, I presume, why it's been kind of picked up by marketing so much. Why do you think that is?
I mean, they can be ironic. They can be an anthem, Black Lives Matter, hashtag awesome. We had a famous blackout during a sports event in the United States. Some company right now, I forget who it is, very quickly leveraged it and was promoting on Twitter, their goods, and, you know, I think it was Oreos. You can still dunk Oreos in the milk in the dark or something like that, right? And then they had a hashtag, which, you know, sort of spread the idea. But the meme was the thing that was spreading, and hashtag is just a way to get at it, right? Or putting a handle on something. You know, for me, the use of Twitter without hashtags is like a bowling ball with no holes in it. It just makes it much easier for you to grab the thing and make sense of it, use it in the way that might be used.
And perhaps a perfect example of this is hashtag home to vote. It trended worldwide, quite by accident, as Irish citizens flew home to vote in the gay marriage referendum. One particular story that captured the essence of this global connection was the mum who saw her son's Facebook post about the hashtag home to vote and decided to decorate his room with rainbows for his return. Here's probably the coolest mum in Ireland, Barbara Byrne, talking to Audioboom on the weekend of the referendum.
I actually had seen a Facebook post that Kevin had put up, his status, where he talked about how difficult it had been when he was growing up, knowing that he was different to other people. And I felt that if somebody growing up in a family where we were very open could feel the turmoil that Kevin expressed, I just thought, gosh, how much more difficult must it be for people who don't have a family who are supportive? And also, it made me really think about how coming out is something about coming to terms inside yourself. It's not just about the people around you. I was inclined to think that if you were with people and you love people and you show them how much you love them, that that would be enough for them to think it was okay. But it suddenly became very clear that that wasn't enough. And I just wanted to, in some way, show him just, I suppose, how much we love and respect him and respect who he is and every aspect of who he is. And I suppose the rainbow flags was just a way of showing that. I see your true colors, and that's why I love you. So don't be afraid to let them show your true colors. True colors are pure.
I think what's unique about hashtags is that they've proven to be incredibly useful in the online world, and that kind of useful function is actually being translated into the offline world as well.
Rochelle Vessey is a lecturer in applied linguistics at Newcastle University. Her work has focused on the way that hashtags have been adopted by languages, and hashtag home to vote is a perfect example of Rochelle's definition. That hashtag allowed people to get a handle on a movement and translate those ideals into the offline world.
And it's useful because it's unique compared to other functions, other trends. There's nothing, as far as I'm aware, that's been quite like a hashtag that's existed in the past.
But perhaps all too often the hashtag is seen as something owned by the collective. Rochelle got me wondering about how much the individual was down to the hashtag's success.
Hashtags can be used as a one-off, and that's what research has shown, is that they're often used not as huge numbers of hashtags in the exact same form, but as unique ways for individual people to express things that aren't picked up later by other users.
Which is totally true. When I'm scrolling down on my Twitter app, I often see hashtags and think, well, that's never going to catch on. But in the tweet, they work just fine. And that's because we use hashtags to convey many different levels of meaning. Rochelle again.
The first is that we're talking about a topic, and that's the word we're using. The second is that we're trying to affiliate with a wider community, and that has to do with the searchable function of the hashtag. And the third is that the medium, so the language that we're actually using, will connect us to a specific way of understanding the world and a community of understanding, which is not necessarily the same as the community using the term.
Hashtag confused? Well, think of it like this. We all have our own way of expressing our thoughts online, and as with anything that gets typed, we all have our own way of reading and imagining that. Context and tone can get totally lost online, and of course, sometimes it could be just because we're trying to be sarcastic. Take the hashtag humblebrag.
False modesty. You present yourself in a modest light, but you're actually showing off.
David Matley, a University of Zurich linguistics professor.
So a typical case is something like a text on Instagram, another tough day at the office, and then the picture that goes with it is a picture of a luxury hotel somewhere in Florida. Now, quite clearly from the text and the image, we can see, oh, there's something wrong here. They're not in the office. They're taking a day off. And then hashtag humblebrag, which quite often goes with that kind of post, makes it explicit.
But it's more than just about showing off your holiday. It's a kind of brag on a whole other level too.
And it's then quite a clever way of presenting oneself on the web, saying, yes, sir, I can play with text and image, and I'm also presenting myself in a positive way because I'm not at work today, and I also know how to use these hashtags.
And there's no job where it's more important to prove that you get hashtags than in marketing. So how much have hashtags changed the game of selling?
The fundamentals of what you do stay the same. So you still have to think about your message, your story, and the emotion you want to get across.
Errol J. Wadeen, creative director at the Red Lorry, Yellow Lorry PR firm.
Now, what has changed is that, especially with something like Twitter, where you've got 140 characters, you have to think more about how you get that message across in a succinct and clear way. And it has focused minds for branding agencies and PR agencies to think, what's that key message I want to get across? And how do I get that across to people as quickly as I can?
But people hate advertisements, especially when they're intrusive.
No one wants to be sold to on social media. If a brand's trying to sell to you, unless it's an offer, then it's never going to work. You've got to have a conversation with your customer, and hashtags allow you to do that.
So, conversations are great, but brands have had to relearn some of the fundamentals in the wake of hashtags and social media. Because with hashtags, you no longer control all of the messages in your conversation.
So McDonald's, for example, they had a hashtag called MD Stories. Now, you've got to understand your brand, how people perceive your brand. So they were looking for McDonald's stories that talked about the brand and how great it is to go into McDonald's. What they got is stories about people walking into McDonald's and smelling type 2 diabetes. So you've got to understand that. You've also got to understand the context of your brand, not only what you're trying to achieve, but what the reception is going to be outside of that. The key is for a brand to understand who their audience are and who they're aiming at. So a good marketeer and a good branding agency will understand who that audience is and understand the language they use and be able to put that across in a hashtag.
And what's everyone's favourite hashtag faux pas?
Proofread your hashtags like a naughty teenager. A good example of this is the Susan Boyle album party. So she was launching a new album. The hashtag was Susan album party, but it also could be read Sue's anal bum party. So think about it from that perspective.
My name is Susan Boyle.
Okay, what's the dream?
I'm trying to be a professional singer.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by.
So what have we learned about hashtags? Well, first of all, make sure they don't accidentally spell anal bum party in them. We've also realised that they're groupings that no one really has any control over. They're also something we're very individual with, even when they are blasted at us by big brands. Earlier, we heard from Lewis Wiltshire from Twitter. He's the Director of Media Partnerships. He called 2015 the year of solidarity because of the hashtags that came about. We talked about how the home of the hashtag feels about this now huge cultural sensation and how the platform feels about the phenomenon it didn't initially want, but will always be intrinsically linked with.
I think for me, hashtags just represent the glue that joins a global conversation together. And that can be a conversation like Home to Vote, which was just the most powerful use of a hashtag to enable people to congregate around and show solidarity around a single idea. Something like Brussels lockdown was an amazing hashtag. You know, that was a hashtag which may well have started as a simple joke, but grew into a global conversation which showed resilience, which showed solidarity in the face of some quite dark times. So for anyone who doesn't know, the police in Brussels, when there was a lockdown going on, asked people to not tweet about it. They didn't want to alert anyone that might be sort of operating in that area, and the police wanted to find out about. And so people kind of respected that, but instead of just saying nothing, they tweeted pictures of cats. And so the first few tweets were using hashtag Brussels lockdown and showing pictures of cats. It grew into a nationwide and then a global phenomenon. And it was a joke, but it showed that there is a light side to the world going through some quite difficult times. And I think all of those individual cases show that Twitter can be used, firstly, in a way that suits you, the individual, and secondly, in a way that unites people around a common cause. And that common cause can just as likely be showing solidarity against international terrorism as photos of cats.
What would a documentary about the internet be without at least one mention of cats, eh?
You know, with full hindsight, you look back and you're like, wow, that worked out really well.
Chris Messina, the inventor of the hashtag again.
There were some principles that guided me along the way. I intentionally decided to keep the hashtag free and open. I intentionally went about it in a way that wouldn't mean that anybody had to ask me permission to use it, you know? And I think like that's something that doesn't always happen in a lot of technology that gets developed. You know, my favorite hashtag of all time probably is, you know, hashtag Barcamp. It's the first one. Because of the way that it was proposed, because, you know, of how subtle it was, like I tweeted probably 30 times that day. It wasn't this special aha moment where it was like, look, world, I figured this thing out. It was more like, hey guys, like, what do you think about this? You know? And then we kind of like moved on. And I probably didn't use another hashtag for like 2 days or something. The subtlety of that to me also indicates how anyone can kind of make this kind of contribution, do this kind of thing, you know, whether it is a, you know, a trending topic or whether it's sort of putting out a photo of a plane in like the Hudson River or like whatever it is, you know, we are making social media our own. That's something that needs to be remembered as we go forward. These systems don't need our permission. You know, we need to manipulate them and turn them into tools that empower us.
The hashtag, a powerful condenser of information that no one and everyone owns. Next time on the history of the internet, we explore the visual meme.
Meme was originally used for the sense of what we'd say now, something went viral on the internet. But now the kind of the way I understand memes is these pictures that you can caption with a more or less fixed phrase.
When 55% of communication is nonverbal, we take what we know about the hashtag one step further and look at how we're trying to take body language and communication to a new level. With interviews from some of your favourite memes, including Bad Luck Brian, stay tuned for a clip from him. But first, the credits for today. With thanks to Alice Taplin for voicing today's timeline. Don't forget to go over to our media partners, The Memo. Their editorial is all about making the future more human. Check out their awesome articles on innovation, business, culture, and future media. Why not give the comment piece? In a world of information, ignorance can be bliss ago. It's nice to have 5 minutes thinking that anyway. Creative Commons music comes from Purple Planet Music, both our theme Hard Trance and the Timeline Mousetrap, plus Goodenock, Sawmill and Ravine. And that hashtag song, if you need to go download it immediately, Dave Ord and Luciana, You Only Talk in Hashtags. Bad Luck Brian's on the way, and with memes in mind, why not send us your faves ahead of episode 2? You can catch us at internet_pod on Twitter and Instagram, or even find us on Facebook. Or even more old school, you can email the show. We love comments, topic suggestions for new shows, and of course, general internet bants. Get us on our old school Hotmail account, internet_pod@hotmail.com. Last plug, if you love the show, help us beat those Apple podcasts, aka iTunes algorithms, by rating, subscribing, and reviewing. It makes a huge difference. Do it wherever you subscribe to podcasts, in fact. It helps us put it in front of more eyes and ears. I'm your presenter and producer, Jamie Wareham. Send me gifts at Jamie_Wareham on Twitter. And now, let's hear that cheeky clip from meme Bad Luck Brian from next week's episode.
That was actually my high school yearbook photo that I took, and, you know, high school yearbook was day, the picture day was one of my favorite days. You know, I'd go down to the thrift store, get some good clothes, dress up, make a stupid face, take the picture and go. But that year it came out better than I could ever expect it. From there, it sat for a couple of years, probably 3 years or so. And my buddy Ian then took it and posted it on, you know, Reddit, took it, put it in a meme generator and posted it on Reddit. You know, he left me a message one morning saying, hey, not a big deal, but I made you internet famous. And I go, you know, what the heck? You know, I get in the morning and I get on Reddit.com and I was on the front page. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that's a big deal. But yeah, I thought at first it would die off because he just took a picture from my Facebook and posted it on there as the Bad Luck Brian meme. But, you know, it kind of just evolved and got bigger and bigger. And it is what it is today.
Hashtag internet bants.